Welcome to Episode 9 of Practical Defense, Defensive Weapons. Welcome back to another episode of Practical Defense. I'm your host, Alex Addix. And this week, we're going to cover a couple of controversial topics, sure to generate some emails, and that's defensive weapons. But before we jump into the topic, I wanted to take a moment to thank all of you, the listeners. Every week, you know, I watch the numbers of downloads and countries grow on the list. And in fact, the show's heard in over 20 countries now, all the way from China to Austria. You know, I started this podcast to help educate people on, you know, simple, everyday methods to reduce their exposure to criminal attacks. And, you know, I hope that they're entertaining, or at least pleasant to listen to. But watching the numbers grow really means a lot to me, and it lets me know that people are really interested. So thank you. All right, so now on to our topic. There are a huge number of weapon types out there, enough to easily fill an entire shelf of encyclopedias. But in the interest of brevity, I'll only discuss two of the most common out there, and one that you should know about if you don't already do. And those are guns, specifically pistols, knives, and coups-de-batons. Now, weapons are dangerous, and that's why they're called weapons and not warm, fluffy bunnies. And experts have even told me that unless you carry a weapon, you're not serious about self-defense. And I'm not certain I'm 100% on board with that. But at least I agree that if you treat weapons with care and respect, they can be a very powerful tool. If you mistreat them, or don't treat them with respect, they're going to be like a wild dog and they're going to bite you or somebody that you love. And first and foremost, when it comes to weapons, you must always obey your local laws. And that's country, state, county, city. They can all be different. And they can sometimes even be in direct conflict with each other. Something that may be permissible under federal law may be criminal and at your state or your city level. So the rule of thumb is to obey the most restrictive law, and you should be in the clear. And also, when I refer to laws, I generally mean and refer to U.S. laws and ordinances, because they're the ones that I'm familiar with. And if you live in another country, and a growing number of the listeners are, you need to be certain to research your local laws and work within those boundaries. And as a law-abiding citizen, you don't want to accidentally cross over into criminal behavior. The other thing is that you want to get professional training. And I've said this in previous episodes. You need to seek professional training in any weapon you intend to carry or use. And this is absolutely critical in understanding and properly wielding any weapon. A good professional instructor will teach you things like how to maintenance the weapon, the proper handling of the weapon, how to safely wield it, safe storage, and even help select a model that fits your size and skill. And plus a whole bunch of other stuff, too. Reading articles and watching DVDs are nice, and they give you kind of an overview, but they're not enough. And I can't recommend hands-on, instructor-led weapons training enough. And the choice to carry a defensive weapon is a purely personal one, and one that only you can make, and you shouldn't make lightly. You do not want to carry a weapon just because you think it's cool or because someone told you it was a good idea. Don't carry weapons if you're not prepared to use it for real. And weapons aren't toys. They are not deterrents, and a professional criminal will know just from looking at you and how you carry yourself when you draw the weapon if you're serious about using it. And if you're not serious, you just gave your adversary a potentially advantageous standpoint and potentially a weapon to use against you. So with all the problems that carrying a defensive weapon can cause for you legally, coupled with a huge responsibility, why would you even want to carry one? Well, when used properly, a defensive weapon can increase your chance of coming out of a life-threatening conflict alive. And notice how I use the phrase life-threatening conflict. Weapons are not for the fist scuffle in a bar. Weapons are not for showing off or scaring people into backing off. Weapons are for life-threatening situations only, meaning that you're in immediate and unavoidable fear for your life. Simply drawing a weapon in the conflict pops you right up there to rung 4 on the use of force ladder, you know, the felony assault deadly force rung. And if you don't understand what I mean by that, you need to go back and listen to episode 7 of Practical Defense, where I covered the use of force ladder. And there's a reason why I did that episode, you know, before I did this one. So I hope by this point you understand the gravity and potential pitfalls of weapons. And this is serious stuff and really shouldn't be taken lightly. Now that said, let's go ahead and move into the specifics of each of the weapon types that I want to cover in this episode. Let's start with guns. There's a saying, God made man, and Colonel Colt made them equal. Personally, I've been around and trained with guns my entire life. My father gave me my first gun when I was only 5. I've had years of civilian and military training and all sorts of different types of firearms. It started when I was 12. I used to fly to San Antonio, Texas, where I would spend my summers living on Fort Sam Houston, which is an Army facility, training in competitive pistol shooting. And later, when I was in the Army, I also received their rifle training. I've taken civilian shooting courses and safety courses every year as a refresher for most of my life. And I continue to practice on a regular basis to keep my skills sharp. And yes, I am a member of the NRA. In fact, I'm a lifetime member. But to put it simply, guns are the great equalizer. A gun can turn anyone into a killer, regardless of age or physical ability. Now, for example, a few years back here in Los Angeles, a police officer was killed by his own 2-year-old son with a service pistol. Now, the child was in the back seat of his car, strapped into a car seat. And what happened was the officer took his pistol off and unthinkingly placed it in the back seat within reach of his restrained child. And then while the officer was driving, the child picked up the gun to play with it, and it went off, and it shot his father in the back through the back of the car seat. So the man managed to pull over to the side of the road, and he called for help, but he died. Now, this tragic story has a couple of points to make. And here in no particular order was, you know, the first one is that guns are weapons that anyone can use to bring lethal force to bear. And in this case, it was a 2-year-old strapped into a car seat. He had the ability to kill a grown man. And another is that they are dangerous, and they always needed to be treated with care and respect. Now, the officer probably wasn't thinking about his deadly weapon when he thoughtlessly placed it in the back seat within reach of his son. He lost respect for his weapon, and he was careless with it, and it bit him. And another is that you must secure your weapon at all times. If you decide to own a gun, you must keep it safe and you must keep it secured at all times. And that I'm referring to, you know, safes in the house, you know, bolted safes, you know, in the concrete in your garage or in your closet, or when you're carrying it, if you're carrying it legally, I hope, that it's secured to your person and that you're not going to lose it. Now, if we're to scale defensive weapons based on ease of use and lethality, guns are without a doubt at the top of that list. And as seen by my example, even a restrained child was able to kill an adult with a gun. Now, that same lethal force can be used for defensive purposes. Now, consider an old lady who has a home invader, or a woman on her way home from work who's assaulted by a man, or even a man defending his wife and children and home against multiple would-be home invaders and robbers. A gun can grant the defender, in each of these hypothetical situations, a fighting chance to survive. Now, the ease of use and supreme lethality of the gun is what really makes this a controversial weapon. And we don't mind our police having them, we don't mind the military having them, yet most often the gun is vilified in the media when in the hands of the average person. And I really think the main reason for this is that most people who own guns don't take the time to train properly in the weapon, and they don't treat them with the respect that it commands. We trust the police and military because we know that they're highly trained. And if everyone was as schooled as the police and the military in guns, there'd probably be far fewer accidents and a higher level of respect for the weapon. So the gun is easily the strongest defensive weapon available. And if you poll anyone who deals with criminals on a regular basis, from police, corrections officers, judges, to criminal attorneys, and I'm talking about both prosecution and defense, you'll find that all of them generally keep guns for personal protection. Also, you need to think about that guns are also easily the most dangerous defensive weapon. And if you decide to own one and keep it for personal defense, you need to seek professional training in the weapon, and I'm going to harp on this, keep it safe and keep it secured at all times. Now, the NRA has gun safety and training courses in all 50 states, and they run all year round. And the classes include pistol, rifle, and even shotgun. And every gun range that I've ever visited has always offered their own safety courses and training courses as well. So, training's available, it's readily available, it's all over the place. So there's no excuse not to take advantage of it. Okay, so let's move on to knives. Knives are probably the most common weapon used in assaults, but they don't get the airtime that the guns do. And why? To the untrained, they don't seem all that dangerous. Not nearly as dangerous as guns, which that makes sense. But people don't think knives are dangerous. And they say, you know, after all, it was just a knife. Hey, but believe you me, knives are extremely dangerous and they're absolutely lethal. So knives are considered a contact weapon, meaning that you actually have to touch someone with them to hurt it, but they're still deadly at 21 feet. Wait, did I just say that knives are lethal at 21 feet? Yes, I did. And I'm not talking about throwing it either. There's an exercise that we do in our reality-based training. It's based upon something called the Tueller Drill, and you can look it up on Wikipedia. And Tueller is spelled T-U-E-L-L-E-R, Tueller Drill. And the exercise boils down to this. It takes less than 1.5 seconds for a knife-wielding person to cross 21 feet, about 3 meters, of clear space and stab you. 1.5 seconds is not much time, and it's about the amount of time it takes to draw a holstered pistol and aim. So when it comes to knives, if your attacker's wielding a knife, you're most likely not going to have time to draw your own. You know, the fencing-style fights that you see on TV and in the movies, that's the stuff of myth. Most often, you're not even going to know that a knife is involved until you're already cut. And if you're lucky enough to see the knife first, your priority is not getting cut by it and not drawing your own weapon for a counterattack. There's a saying about knives, too. They say, in a knife fight, one person goes to the hospital and the other goes to the morgue. I know it sounds cool, but it doesn't quite hold up under scrutiny. So, I mean, the average knife fight lasts only between 5 and 10 seconds, and usually entails only one person attacking and the other just being cut up. So, if I'm not going to see the attacker's knife, or if I do see it, I'll be so busy trying not to get cut, I'm not going to draw my own, why would I want to bother carrying one? And one consideration is disparity of force. And again, I covered this in Episode 7, The Use of Force Ladder. So think about the scenarios that I laid out in the gun selection. Simply substitute a knife for the gun. And also, consider a bunch of guys thumping you in a parking lot outside of a bar. A knife is a last-ditch, hand-to-hand weapon for close-quarters defensive fighting. And it's far more lethal than most people give it credit for, and it deserves a lot of respect. And just like with guns, you need to be aware of your local laws, and with knives, they run a range greater than guns. Because there are far more different types, and then certain institutions and cities and states consider different lethality of different types of knives. So, you know, you've got your folding knives, you've got your fixed blades, you've got your spring-loaded or switch blades, you've got your double-edged blades, of all varying lengths and sizes. And what's legal to carry in your county can land you in trouble in just the next county over. So if you intend to carry a knife for personal protection, you need to research each place that you intend to carry it, because it could be very different. And there's a place to start for this research, but it's by no means comprehensive for every area, because you need the whole internet for that. And it's a book by David Wong, and it's called Knife Laws of the 50 States, and it was published in 2006. And again, that was David Wong, W-O-N-G, and the book is called Knife Laws of the 50 States. And the last defensive weapon I'll talk about in this episode is the coup baton. Now, the Kubota is fairly recent when it comes to weapons. It was designed by TAK Kubota back in the 1970s to be a less-than-lethal defensive weapon. Now, the ends are blunt, specifically to cause no skin penetration, which is an important legal distinction. And when used properly, it can cause a tremendous amount of pain, but no lasting or permanent damage. And for those unfamiliar with the Kubota, it's a small cylinder, about half inch in diameter, between 5 and 6 inches long, and it's usually made of wood, hardened plastic, or aircraft aluminum. And it's held in the hand and can be used to strengthen fists when punching, and the end that sticks out of a clenched fist can be used to strike pressure points or bone, and it can be used to assist in joint locks for restraining people and taking people down. When you attach your car keys to the end, which is really common, it can be used as a flail to whip at your attacker, either in the face or the eyes or, you know, slap the hands. They're actually really pretty inexpensive. You can purchase one at most online martial arts suppliers for between about $5 and $10. Now, when you're looking for Kubotons, you'll probably also find versions with spikes that stick out between the fingers or a sharp pointed end. These are not real Kubotons, and they're not what I'm referring to here. The Kubota is just a straight cylinder with blunt ends. Now, if you're curious about them, you can still find books and a DVD by Master Kubota. They're still available, you know, at Amazon or other online bookshops. They're starting to go out of print, but a lot of the resellers and used bookstores and things like that will carry them. And again, it's just for interest. Again, there really is no substitute for real instructor-led training. Now, one of the many nice things about the Kubota is that it's a fairly safe defensive weapon, you know, and when it's not used, it's just like a stick. So with a Kubota, you wouldn't freak out if your 2-year-old picked it up the way that you would if your child picked up a gun or a knife. And for those that might feel uncomfortable wielding a knife or a gun, a Kubota might be a good alternative. And finally, the Kubota is not subject to many of the carrying restrictions that you'll find with knives or guns. But you're still not going to be able to carry it onto a plane or into any weapon-restricted facility. They're forbidden there, and any law enforcement agent will recognize it for what it is and take it from you. Now, the problems are that the Kubota is not as forceful a defensive weapon as a gun or a knife. Also, the uneducated attacker, and most are, will not recognize it for what it is, and so you would lose any sort of fear or intimidation factor when you pull it out to defend yourself. But, you know, it's a fairly safe and effective defensive weapon, and far better than nothing at all. So, in summary, we have weapons are really dangerous and need to be treated with respect and care. And you need to keep your weapons secured at all times. You need to keep them secured. You also need to seek professional, hands-on training for any defensive weapon you intend to carry and use. You need to research your local laws and ordinances to see what options are available to you. And you always want to always obey your local laws and ordinances. Don't bother to carry a defensive weapon if you're not prepared to use it for real. It'll just get you into more trouble. God made man, Colonel Colt made them equal. I just love that saying. Knives are lethal weapons, even at 21 feet away. You should go back if you haven't listened to it already, and maybe want to listen to it again. Review episode 7, The Use of Force Ladder. It's very important when if you're dealing with weapons. And you might want to look into the Kubota as an effective, non-lethal defensive weapon. Before we close, I'm going to plug my Women's Survival course in January again. I'm running a course the last 2 Sundays in January here in Los Angeles. And this is a full 16-hour course designed by Sergeant Jim Wagner. I've posted the course details to my website with dates and times in a sign-up form. It is an absolutely fantastic program, and it's for women only, and I highly recommend it. We're going to cover things like, you know, threat zones, conflict defensive strategies, stalking detection, harassment, vehicles, and of course we'll go over hand-to-hand defense, you know, punches and kicks and blocks and things like that. We're going to do weapons defense, we're going to talk about the use of force ladder, we're going to talk about home security, and a whole host of other things. Now, I've already received some inquiries about the program from women, and there's been some concern about the physical requirements, because 16 hours is a long time. And this is not like the men's course where it's like 90% hands-on and 10% lecture. The women's course is about 50-50. So we do some training scenarios, and then we'll break to discuss things for a bit or do a walk and talk. What I mean by that is that we're not always in the facility. We actually leave the site and walk around the parking lot and walk around the neighborhood for real-world explanations and demonstrations. The course material will blow you away, so you really need to get your wives, your sisters, and your mothers to be safer and become hard targets. Hope to see you there. Well, that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions and commentary, send an email to podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe.
Kevin MacLeod.